Good morning and welcome to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. What a beautiful morning we have here on February 23rd. It's February 23rd, and driving into the studio, I noticed the thermometer indicated 59 degrees, a balmy 59 degrees here in Greenwich, Connecticut. Hard to believe, but hey, we'll take it, right? Listen, thank you for joining me. And, you know, one of the themes for this show has been, the idea that there's so much negativity, I think, in the media. We've got primary debates going on, a lot of negativity in some of those discussions. This is not a show about politics, of course, but my focus is not so much to ignore the fact that we've got a lot of this negativity, but really to focus on those things that are positive, because there's so much that's going on in people's lives, and we've talked a little bit about this. We know about the economy. We know about the poor unemployment figures. We know how long people have been out of work, many people losing their homes, many lives being disrupted. How do we make our day brighter? How do we put a little bit of extra bounce into our step, especially when we seem to be inundated with so much bad news? Here joining us today is Tony Ventrella, who's got a very similar last name. Could there be a relationship here? Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. It's good to talk to you. Yeah, there is a connection, I think. Although there are several Ventrellas apparently across the country who are not related to Scott. Or Tony, so there.
those who have been living in the area for a little while may remember the name Tony Ventrella, because Tony actually was born and raised, you know, in this area in Wilton, and was a radio show. Had a sports announcer back on, let's see, WMMM, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But this goes back a few years, so we'll get to that in a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about your story. But right now, Tony is the digital media host for the Seattle Seahawks and Seattle Sounders FC. Also, as I mentioned, former, not only years ago with his radio, the sports show, but also a talk show host and a TV sports personality, primarily in the Seattle area for many years. So, Tony, first question before we get into this whole idea of brightening up people's day. How do we brighten up our day, put a little bit of extra bounce into our step? But let me just back up for a second. Digital media host. What does a digital media host do?
It's funny, Scott, because that was my first question when I was off the job in July of 2008, sitting in a restaurant in Kirkland, Washington. Up until that point, I had had a television career that lasted from 1977 to 2007. Prior to that, there was radio for 6 or 7 years, as you mentioned. So I had the career in broadcasting. Then, of course, as you know, as we got into the 21st century, the web, the Internet, became more and more complex, more and more exciting, more and more possibilities. The professional teams, especially the NFL, they really kind of spearheaded this, got into the websites and these wonderful websites in which you could get everything from video to literally minute-to-minute updates on through blogs on what players were doing. So they called me in 2008 and said, can you do basically television on the web for our new soccer team, which was at the time new in 2009 in the MLS, and, of course, our existing NFL team, the Seahawks. I had worked with them for many years anyway. So what I do is on, after the game, post-game interviews in the locker room, community outreach events. Both teams have a huge community outreach department. We do a lot in the community with nonprofits, and there's always a story connected to that. So it's video on the web, to shorten it up a little for you.
How's it been working with the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, it's a great organization. First of all, Pete Carroll has been our coach now. He's in his third full season, coming from a great success at USC. Of course, his book, Winning Forever, is a very successful book. And just you, of course, have written, I think, two or three books now. And the same types of keys to success and flipping your thoughts from negative to positive are in Coach Carroll's book. And he runs his practices like that. He runs his games like that. he runs the office like that. It's a very upbeat place to work, and it's not that he doesn't have a Pollyannish attitude. If something is going wrong, he's going to correct it, but he's not going to hang his head while he's doing it, and I think that's the big difference. And so it's great working with Coach Carroll, very upbeat guy. Now, of course, they're all down in Indianapolis at the Combine and getting ready for the draft at the end of April.
Yeah, of course, and it's refreshing to hear that as well, because we again hear most of the the negatives, especially here in the New York market, most of the negative stories on some of the local sports teams. And I don't want to just broadly say a sports team, but individuals on certain sport teams that don't seem to be the best role models. And I think just recently, I read something about Gary Carter, who of course just passed away recently at the age of 57. And I really love this, and maybe this is a nice lead into really the subject about how to be a little bit more positive and during negative times. But apparently, I think it was the you would know this much better than I, but I think it was the 86 season, which I did follow back then, when Gary Carter's with the Mets, and he beat out I think it was a single to first. He beat out a throw to first. And that kept the game going, and of course they went on to win the World Series. He was really the spark plug, I think, for that team. But a reporter later asked him how he was able to beat out that throw to first, because at the time he had been suffering with severe knee pain. And I'm paraphrasing, but his response was, sometimes you have to play through the pain.
Yeah.
And I think that metaphorically, we all... No matter how bright our lives might seem, no matter all the good things, but we all run into those bumps. We all run into challenging situations, sure. Challenging people, and metaphorically, I just think that's what a beautiful saying. Sometimes we got to play through the pain. So a few years ago, you wrote and published a book called Smile in the Mirror. Now that sounds, I'm going to be having written a book similar, The Power of Positive Thinking in Business. Many people, I don't know about you, but many people will say, well, Scott, that the whole idea of positive thinking is comes across a little bit Pollyannish, unrealistic. You're looking through these rose-colored glasses. It's not the way the world works. Tell me a little bit about your experience in working with that book, and also let's get into some of the content. First of all, what motivated you to write the book?
Well, I think quite similar to your reasons for writing your book. Mine was to put forth the lessons that I learned from really four people in my life: my mother, my father, my sister Bunny, who passed away at the age of 10 many, many years ago, and my uncle Ralph Romano, who was a radio talk show host later to become a comedian. Those lessons from those four people. And I'll tell you that, to back up for a second, you were talking about people saying that positive thinking is not reality. My mother taught me that negative thinking wasn't reality. She said that the world is a positive place. It's those who think negatively that are not living in reality, which I think is a wonderful way to kind of flip the whole picture. And we were taught growing up that positive was the norm and negative is the dark cloud that comes through.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, she always had this, she used to say to us all the time, if you walk into a dark room and light a candle, or turn on a light, the darkness is gone, which proves that it wasn't real in the first place. I loved her way of thinking. So that's kind of why I wrote the book. And the title, of course, is Smile in the Mirror. And that comes from my dad's barbershop, which was on Main Street in Norwalk for many, many years, Ventrella's Barbershop. Your dad, of course, also had a barbershop for many years in Weston and later in Georgetown. And I think the smile in the mirror comes from the fact that I worked in that shop, and there's nothing but mirrors in a barbershop. And my dad would be looking in the mirror all day. I couldn't help it. And so I decided, I'd rather see my face smiling than frowning. So I would smile all the time into the mirror. It was kind of kooky, but I would do it anyway. And I think what it does is it gives you a positive self-image. It allows you to see your face in a smile, which is a much more pleasant way to go through the day. And I think it actually, it helps you feel better about yourself. And it certainly helps the person coming the other direction that's seeing you smile.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about the title of your book. At first, when you first think about it, Smile in the Mirror, it didn't really have the initial impact wasn't as you had described it. But the more I thought about it, and the more I thought about every time I look in the mirror, you know, I'm just making sure that I'm not losing any more hair, than not get, you know, looking for the grays. But I never really thought about, I never really look at myself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And if I do, I'm not smiling.
Yeah,
so it's sure. It brings a great image. I want to go back now to those four role models, and starting with your mom. And I love that also, the idea that you go into a dark room, you light a candle, and it brightens up the
sure.
The place. And your mom, though, did not have an easy life. You mentioned your sister Bunny, who passed away at 10. Tell me a little bit about that. How was she able to bounce back? Of course, your dad too. But let's start with your mom.
A lot of adversity, there's no doubt about it. I mean, she had an interesting and challenging young life, growing up born in 1912. She'd be 100 this year if she's still alive. This is the 100th anniversary of both of my parents' births. In fact, we intend to have a celebration at some point this summer. But, she grew up, it was an okay childhood, a little difficult. There were 10 kids in the family. Her dad had a bakery. All the kids were made to work in the bakery in those days. There was no child labor laws going on. If you had a family and your kid was 9.
nice perks, jelly donuts for lunch.
Exactly. Yeah, you can have all the donuts you want. You know, the worst probably food in the world, and yet we all love donuts. But anyway, so she, and then, of course, she had the children and lost a baby early on, long before I was born, and then had a couple other children, and then lost another child. So she lost two children as a young mother. There is no greater hurt or pain than losing a family member, and especially a child. Overcoming that. And let me back up a second. This was in 1956 that my sister passed away. Well, people that have been around the Norwalk Greenwich area for a long time will recall 1955 was the worst flood in the history of the state at that time, and my dad's building in which his barbershop stood was flooded out right after he bought it. So not only did he lose the building temporarily in a flood, but then his daughter died 6 months later. It is about the worst 1-2 punch you can think of. My mother was supported a great deal by her church, by her faith, and by knowing, again, as I said, that negative was not the reality.
And
positive was.
And as I recall, your younger sister, Bunny, she also suffered from cystic fibrosis. Is that correct?
That's the knowledge that we've got today, that she died of cystic fibrosis, right?
And I believe also at that time, in fact, I know a young man that suffers from that today. Also at that time, people were not expected to live very long at all.
No, well, that's the other thing. The doctors were telling my mother, consider this, the baby is a year old, goes in for an exam, and the doctor says she has 6 months to live. This is as a year old child. Then she's two and a half, goes in for an exam, the doctor says she has 6 months to a year to live. Every time she'd get examined, the doctors would predict that she wouldn't live out the year. And this is for her entire life. And so you think about that news every time you get a doctor exam. So it was that constant flood of negativity that my mother was warding off. And I remember I remember walking away from, you know, the cemetery, walking back to the car after the funeral. I was 11 at the time, and my mother turned to me and said, "This is your opportunity to let your light shine in the world the way your sister would have." And I never forget that. My mother was educated to ninth grade, had no college education, but had a deep knowledge of humanity and the way that that people should at least try to live.
Unbelievable that in her grief at that moment that's, you know, here she is imparting a gift on you that now, of course, has carried on all this time. That's incredible, absolutely incredible. And as I knew her, she was the real deal. She lived what she believed, and was a great role model, I think, for many, many people. Now let's move on to your dad. Now your mom and dad met. How old were they?
They were. I think they were early 20s when they met. And my dad, of course, was a barber. My mom was working at the time in her father's grocery store, because he had a bakery and later a grocery store. And they met. And then, got married within a year or two after they met and began having babies. That's the way it was back then.
That's right.
So tell me about your dad, Bigger Than Life, and when I think about, you know, wisdom, and also, if I recall, also, I believe he served in the Navy for during the war.
He did. Yeah, he was briefly in the Navy, and then he, of course, had the barbershop for years. Yeah, there was the great thing about it is, and I'm so grateful to have had two wonderful parents, and I know that anyone that had at least one, or sometimes lucky enough to have two, feels that same gratitude. But the difference between the two, you had my mother, who was tough as nails, but you know, soft on the outside. You had my dad, who was tough as nails as well, and kind of soft on the inside. So it was, you had that sort of good cop, bad cop thing going on. He had definite rules. You had to respect the family. We visited grandma, you know, every Sunday. We visited his mother, and whom you as well knew. And the family was very important to my father. He continued to tie that family together every chance we got, and we grew up with that attitude. And he went through the same pain that my mom did when my sister passed away. She helped him through it, and he was gruff around the outside, but one of the nicest people ever. I'll tell you a quick story about the barbershop here. I don't know how our time is.
No, we're doing well. We're doing well.
In walks, in fact, I'm going to tell this story today at a little motivational talk I'm doing. I never forget this. I'm working for my dad. I was probably 17 at the time. There was another barber in the shop as well. In walks a woman with five sons, ranging from probably 14 down to about 2. And I heard her whisper a little bit to my dad, "I just do 2 of the boys today. I don't have enough money for the 5 haircuts. I have to go run some errands. I'll be back." So she left, and my dad turned to us, and he said, "I want you to cut all 5 haircuts, do exactly what the guys want, and when she comes back, tell her to let it go. We'll catch it next time." So that, and this is a guy running a business now.
trying to feed his own family, right?
Yeah, and sure. He gives 5 haircuts to this woman who truly could not afford it. It wasn't a scam. She really didn't have the money. And I never forget giving away those 5 haircuts. She came back next time and paid for the 5, and he never charged her for the first time around, never did. And she, of course, quietly was thankful for that. And it was a great lesson. As you know, when you witness an act of kindness, it helps not only the person for whom the act was done, not only the person who did the act of kindness, but anyone who observes it as well gets a positive vibe from that. And that was the case then, that day.
Other lessons from your dad?
Well, there were many. One was to be on time. In fact, if you could, be 20 minutes early. That was his. So as you know, if you're going to LaGuardia or JFK to take a flight at 6 in the morning, we get up around 2, you know. He was always, and my sons affectionately call it Ventrella time now.
Right.
When you're a half hour early. But that's respect. That's what that is.
That's
really,
right.
There's nothing worse than being late, and nothing more disrespectful. And my dad was all about respecting others. He would say to me, start a conversation with the customer in the chair. If he doesn't want to talk, just be quiet. And for God's sakes, listen to him if he is talking, so you can actually respond to what he says. Don't just say, "How's it going?" Listen for what the other person's saying, and engage in a conversation if they want to. That's, again, you're making someone feel better. So those were other great lessons. And, of course, he had the garden and the backyard, as a lot of people did in those days. And he was all about physical labor, getting his hands dirty, and loved it, absolutely loved doing it.
And, you know, the underlying theme here, as I think about this, you mentioned respect, the whole idea of being on time, the idea of listening to the customer in the chair, the idea of the importance of family and tradition, respecting elders, respecting tradition. So there was a deeper, it seems as though there was a deeper value, respect the work ethic. In fact, let me see, I want to make sure I get this straight, 87 years old when he passed away?
Yeah, he was 87, yeah.
And he was, as I recall, he was mowing the lawn on a beautiful early October morning while there was still dew on the grass.
Yeah. In a way, it's a funny story. I tell this as well. My father's mowing the lawn, and he had had some problems leading up to this, a few months leading up to it, with a little respiratory problems, and he'd been in the hospital one time. And so he didn't feel good. He got up. He wasn't feeling well. He said to my mom, you know, we'll go run our errands in a minute. I got to get outside and get some exercise. I don't feel good. And so in pulling to start the mower, I guess the rope broke on the mower. He fell backwards. And the shock of the whole thing maybe hit his head. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but he just died right there. So he's laying on the ground, and the mower is still running. My mom runs out there, sees that, shuts off the mower. And she told me later, she said, well, I turned the mower off. I called 911, and I took his wallet. And I said, well, why'd you take his wallet? She said, well, he had $11 in there. So it just goes to show you the way that it's sort of that depression thinking that, yeah, you know, this is not looking good, but I better take his wallet.
Right. And you know, there's something else, though, that didn't get by me, and that is most people, when they're not feeling well, you lay down. And
yeah,
instead,
yeah.
His solution was to actually get out there and do something. And I love that, because you've got a lot of people who are depressed, who can't seem to, you know, get things going. And what do they do? What do sometimes we all do? We you know, we just kind of lay down. More or less give up. Versus, let's get back to the, hey, let's run through the pain, work through the pain, play through the pain, right?
Yeah,
we're going to take a break, Tony. We're here with Tony Ventrella. Tony does all kinds of things. We're going to talk a little bit about your career. I want to hear a few little anecdotes about your Uncle Ralph. We're going to be right back. We'll continue our discussion with Tony. And we'll also want to hear from Tony on the golden nugget of the day. Back in a moment here on 1490 WGCH.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
That moment, we arrived on the scene.
The storm had nearly destroyed the area.
This was our own community. Friends, family, people we grew up with, went to school with, we were there to help.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
They made it down to the storm cellar, but the house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had chainsaws going, and we had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Right here, close to home, in my state.
It was one of those life-changing moments where I realized I am making a difference in these people's lives and mine. I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
You can serve part-time and be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Connecticut National Guard. Aired by the Connecticut Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella, and we're speaking with Tony Ventrella out on the West Coast. Got himself out of bed, you know, at the crack of dawn, and we're continuing with talking about some of the role models that you mentioned in your book, Smile in the Mirror. Uncle Ralph, tell us a little bit about Uncle Ralph.
Well, Ralph was a radio talk show host, one of the first of its kind, really, in the Utica, New York area in the 1950s and 60s. He was my role model in broadcasting. The first time I sat in a radio studio was in his studio. He also did sports, by the way, and once had Johnny Podres in his studio, one of the winning pitchers for the 1955 Brooklyn Dodger World Series championship team, the first time the Dodgers ever won a World Series. And Johnny Podres in the offseason went up and visited my uncle in the Utica studio back when he was doing sports. So that was his career. On the side as a hobby, he was a comedian. Loved telling jokes, loved making people feel good about themselves. Let's back up just a bit. When he was born, he had some eye drops put in his eye. They were the wrong ones. He went blind in one eye. So my Uncle Ralph had a glass eye on one side. Two beautiful blue eyes. One of them was fake. Later struggled with everything from diabetes to leukemia. During the World War II, had shrapnel in his body from the war. So picture this older man now, works for 30, 40 years, retires to Florida, and now he's going to be a comedian in his mid to late 60s. And he does over 3,000, not exaggerated, 3,000 free comedy shows.
Oh, my gosh.
His whole idea was to give back all the people that had helped him during his life. And we're talking about VFW, the Knights of Columbus, various hospitals where he had been for his shrapnel and his other problems. So he was doing all these comedy shows, and I got a letter from him. The last letter I ever got from him, it was about 2 months after his final comedy show. And he said, "Tony, I'm so excited. I did a show at the VFW. There were veterans there. There were old people there, and I was making them laugh, and it was just great." And the story goes where he was on chemo. He's getting chemo for leukemia. And the host of the show called him 2 days before the show and said, "Ralph, I got a Christmas show coming up at the VFW. My comedian quit on me. Can you come and fill in?" And Ralph said, "Yeah, I'm on chemo, but you know what? I'll get there. If it'll help make people laugh, maybe it'll make me feel better, too." Talk about playing through the pain. That was what that was about. So he shows up in his little white tuxedo, gets there, and the MC says, "Well, we're in real trouble, Ralph. Can you go on right now? I know you're not scheduled for 30 more minutes, but my harmonica player has an attitude. She walked out on me. The singer is singing, 'I'll be home for Christmas.' These poor guys haven't been home for Christmas in 50 years. So could you get the crowd going?" So Ralph stands up. He does 45 minutes of comedy. But he notices in the front row there's a man sitting in a wheelchair, veteran of World War II. And Uncle Ralph looks down and says, "Sir, I'm sorry, I can't help but noticing you're not having a good time." The man knocks on his artificial limb and says, "If you had one of these, you wouldn't be having a good time either." So without a hitch, my Uncle Ralph pops out his glass eye, hands it to the man, and of course it's warm at the time. It's like a biscuit, you know. And he says to the guy, "Well, I have one of these, and I'm having a ball." And of course, the audience cracks up. The man had to laugh. It changed the mood of the entire audience just by flipping a negative to a positive, which is what he did as well as anybody I knew.
No, I'm really loving this, too. We have a few more minutes. You've done so many different things in your career, the sports radio, barbering, and then TV sports for many, many years. You have Positive Energy production. What drives you? What's the deal? What's going on?
Well, these four people, my sister Bunny, number one, as I look out, and I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but every night when it's clear in the Seattle area, and believe me, it's clear a lot more than the rumor says out here. We have beautiful nights with the sky is so bright it'll knock your eyes out. And I look up at the stars and say a little prayer, and it's a message to my sister, my mom, dad, my Uncle Ralph, but especially my sister Bunny. And I always go, I'm going to do exactly what my mother said to do, and that is carry on the positive attitude that you had. And that's what drives me. Plus, it's fun to get in front of an audience and share positives and make them laugh. And so that's what I do. I have my what I call my five keys to happiness: smile in the mirror, people need people, flip that thought, never too late, and live in gratitude. Those are the titles of the five topics. And I stick with them, and people seem to get something out of it. And as long as that's happening, I'll keep doing it.
How about the golden nugget of the day?
I'm going to go with the Maya Angelou quote: "People will not remember what you said. People may not remember what you did, but people will always remember how you made them feel."
Tony, thank you so much. Make your day brighter, folks. Put a little bit of extra bounce. Bring a little bit of humor into the situation, into your life. Play through the pain and give back at least a couple of thoughts. Thank you so much again. Please join me next week where I'll be speaking with Kurt Welling, President and CEO of AmeriCares Foundation. We'll be discussing the importance of giving. Thank you for joining me today. Remember, you only have one life. Why not live it on purpose? This is Scott Ventrella for the Business of Living Show. So long.
Can I get Tony on?